You're listening to Fresh from the Hill, Inside Stories of Noteworthy Cornellians. I'm Aaron Camino Smith, class of 2004, an architecture graduate. Very excited to be here with my guest today. Dana Lerner is class of 2014. Dana is the social media strategist at Broadway Across America, and Dana is also a Tony-nominated theater producer and entrepreneur. She is the founder and CEO of Red Pelican Creative, LLC. Dana, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
We're so happy that you are here. You are a graduate of Cornell University.
I am.
You're very active in Cornell as an alumni. What is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear Cornell University?
College, I guess. I don't know. Fun, tradition, history, family. Yeah.
So lots of great adjectives.
Yeah.
So many things to say. So you said, I heard fun, I heard tradition, I heard family.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big one, family.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you mean when you say family?
Well, I guess it's twofold, right? Being a part of Cornell, you're sort of instantly welcomed into the Cornell family of all of the alumni and all of the students and everyone who's involved. I'm very fortunate in that my dad went to Cornell and my brother also went to Cornell, and we overlapped a year. So I was a senior and he was a freshman. So it's always just been really fun to be at Cornell, go back up to Cornell when my brother was a student and I was a graduate. I actually learned how to walk at my dad's 15th college reunion. So I was like 13 months or whatever. My birthday's in May and reunion is June. And yeah, I think they just sort of like let me loose on the art squad. And there it is.
It's a good place to fall. There's plenty of grass.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So it really is family for you,
yeah,
in that sense. Any new family from Cornell?
Not yet.
just all the friends, and then who knows? You never know what could happen. So it sounds like you had Cornell in mind even from a young age.
I guess drinking the Big Red Kool-Aid from a young age.
That is the color of Kool-Aid and the color of the Big Red.
Yes. So no, I mean, it was at first I didn't even want to go to Cornell. I was like, I don't want to go because Dad went there and I want to be my own person. And you know, like when you're 15, you're like, I'm the most brilliant person in the world. And then I went up for a visit, and of course it was like the end of March and it was the most beautiful day. Like it was maybe 78 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. And I was just like, oh my goodness. Oh, this is college. This is awesome. And we had done a few upstate college tours like prior to getting, like Cornell was the last stop.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that was it.
And was there something about Cornell academically that attracted you other than the nice weather?
Yeah. So I was a theater major in the College of Arts and Sciences. So for me, I really wanted to get a liberal arts education, but study theater and like a broad education of theater. So not a fine, like not a BFA or a conservatory program, but really just study theater, learn all about theater, get to play sort of all the time, but also taking language and history and science and things like that.
Did you want to be an actress growing up? Was that your main thing?
I think probably every person who works in the theater at one point was like, I'm going to be a star.
Yeah.
I'm also a big athlete, so I had to decide whether it was going to be theater or sports. And actually in high school, I took because I played sports all throughout high school, I could only take the theater electives as opposed to doing like the musical or the play. And I actually took a course called theatrical production in high school, and that sort of opened my eyes to like what is a producer and what do they do. And so sort of after that moment, I was like, oh, I'm going to be on the business side of theater. And so I just wanted to have a large base of knowledge to draw from.
Yeah.
Prior to that.
It's a great place for it because they have that beautiful theater.
Yeah, it's a great space.
College town. What is it? A 300-seat theater or
something
like that?
It's large, yeah. And it's definitely not used enough, I would say.
I think I took a theater class or two when I was there, and I was forced to go see shows.
Yeah.
And I remember going and thinking, wow, why do we not see more shows? These plays are great.
And no, it's awesome. It's a really special thing that we have, and it's a great location. I mean, like, I lived right in College Town, maybe 300 feet from the theater, so I'd sort of roll out of bed, go to class, and then go home and take a nap and go back to class. So, no, it's a really special thing that we have on campus.
Does Cornell have a reputation for being a big theater school?
Not really, no.
Yeah, I didn't think so because I didn't remember ever hearing that when I was there.
No, it's unfortunately, I think as we see in our culture, sort of the arts, are having some flux. There's like a lot of transition and people are trying to figure out how to fund the arts, and especially if the arts aren't necessarily as lucrative as other types of research or like tech or things like that, right? I think a lot of places, not just educational, but just other institutions, are trying to figure out like what to do with it. I'm glad that Cornell still has the theater major. I know they've done a lot to restructure it. When I was there, it was called the Department of Theater, Film, and Dance, and now it's called Performing and Media Arts. So I think, you know, this rebranding, perhaps trying to get more people to participate and maybe not just be so scary, right? I'm very lucky that I told my parents I'm going to be in the theater, and they said, great, like make it happen. Whereas I feel I had a lot of friends who... And they were like, oh, I'm going to be a theater major. The parents were like, no, you're going to be an econ major, and then you can like double major or minor in theater. So hopefully, you know, I think perhaps with the performing and media arts, it's more broad and open to a lot of new students.
Yeah, and we'll probably attract more talented people who deserve
to
be there and not putting it off thinking it's not lucrative enough or not special enough.
Well, it's like not as sexy as like tech or business, but it's I think it's just as important.
Maybe they just need to throw the word coding in there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, something like that. I think
theater arts and theater coding.
Right.
Oh, we can
well,
do coding?
Like there's like nerdy stuff you can do in the theater, right? Like you can be, I mean, not that it's nerdy to be a lighting designer, but a lot of that is within a computer. Like that's a lot of software, computer stuff.
Nerd is cool.
Nerdy things, but it's no, I think it's a great department. The professors are really awesome and the location's great. So,
and it's right next to another gorge and waterfall.
It's a really great spot to be.
So when you were at Cornell, what kinds of classes, what kinds of things were you learning?
I really tried to take just every single course I could. I really loved college. Like that's why I said it was fun, I think, in the beginning, because I just, you know, in high school, you have to take math, you have to take science. And yes, within arts and sciences, I did take math and science, but I took them on my own terms. So I took a lot of history courses, like a lot of American studies courses. Specifically in the theater, though, I took everything, right? So playwriting, acting, costume design, set design, theater history, you know, like sort of from the beginning of time to the present, world theater history. So, you know, it's like American theater history, world theater history. My favorite course that I ever took in college was called Commedia dell'arte, which is basically the original improv theater. So it's Italian, and it's all of these stock characters. So all of these different plays basically have all these stock characters, or the names are all different, but it's like this character equals this type, like the grumpy old man, or the ingenue, or the young lover, like things like that. And it's also a lot of masks. So someone can easily recognize them sitting, you know, 1,000 seats back, right, in this amphitheater. And we made masks, and we spent, you know, the class, I guess, was like 2 hours. It was like a Tuesday, Thursday, or Monday, Wednesday class, and it was like just like a large chunk of time. And part of the class, basically, it's like a clown class. And it really like unleashed my inner clown. Like, I think, I mean, obviously, I'm not being very humble or modest right now, but I do think I'm funny. And that class really, see, you're laughing. That class really, let me know that it was okay to like let that in, like you have an inner clown, this is what it is, it's okay to do it. So it was like a lot of physical comedy, as well as like this stock thing. And we made masks, and we just like for the classes we would just spend 2 hours walking around the classroom in character
as that character.
And my brother once looked at my transcript, like he was like, oh, what courses should I take? And he, like, looked. He's like, oh, well, like, no wonder you got so many good grades. Like, you were, like, doing, like, you had mask making 101 as a course.
Being a clown.
Right. And obviously that's not what the course was called. But, no, that class was really special. It was a maybe 8 or 10 kids. And it was in the fall. And then in the spring, we devised a theater piece that was put up at the Schwartz Center in one of the smaller spaces. But that was a silent improv comedy clown piece that we devised sort of from that class, and then made it a ticketed event. And that was awesome.
I mean, it sounds like they should change it to the College of Theater, Film, and Clown classes.
Right. I'm pretty sure they should definitely. No, I think everyone should take that
course. We could attract
course.
A lot more people because of the clown class. That seems helpful right. just in general, though, to just access your inner clown.
Yeah. I mean, it was hard. Like, and part of it was we had to do a lot of research, too, on just sort of all of the history of that type of theater. But also, it was really hard, like, being, you know, for 2.5 hours, being completely silent and just being internal and, like, moving around the space and interacting with the space and the other people you meet in the space. Everyone meditation's really big and mindfulness is big.
And it sounds like meditating.
Right. But it was, you know, you're in college and you're trying to get a grade and it was so much more than just meditating or just being mindful. It was like hyper aware, hyper present. And I'm a planner. And so it was like very hard for me to just be like, you're just going to feel the room. Like you're just going to do the thing.
Plan to not know what you're about to do.
Right. But that's I tell a bunch of Cornell people, like, just go with the flow. And everyone probably fall over crying because that's not what Cornell people do.
There isn't enough structure there.
Right. There's no plan. What do I do?
So that sounds like it was a great full year of stuff that you were doing.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Clown related. And then, so when you were nearing... let's say middle of senior year and you're trying to figure out what to do with life and where to go job wise. Did you have a plan?
I didn't get recruited at the career recruiting things that happen in October, if that's what you mean. I did go, you know how everyone gets in like the frenzy of the recruiting buzz when all of the companies come back to campus and like the young alumni come back with their company and it's like all of these huge companies and everyone goes, even if you're not, right, like not a banker or whatever, you go. And I went to all these companies and like I went to Google and I was like, here's my resume. They're like, so you don't know how to code? And I was like, no, but I really think you could be the next Netflix, right? So this was in 2013, 2014, right? And I was like, and they were like, so, but you've never taken a computer programming class, like a software? And I was like, no, but like, I really have great creative ideas. And they were like, no, we're not taking your resume. So the plan was to find a job elsewhere, because that wasn't particularly helpful. I actually used my resources within the theater department. One of the professors I had is a member of the League of Professional Theater Women, which is a league of professional theater women. You know, it's like producers, writers, directors, all this stuff. And she connected me with another member who is a director and a producer who has a company in New York City. And I basically graduated without a job. And that's what happens in the theater industry. And I think mostly in entertainment too. You're not needed until like 2 weeks prior to something happening.
Right.
Whereas in most other industries, it's sort of like a whole year in advance, you know, like there's an incoming class of analysts or an incoming class of salespeople. And for theater, it's sort of, or any, you know, like in entertainment too, it's, oh, well, now we have this new movie that we didn't have 2 weeks ago. So we're going to do this movie.
Up.
Right.
Yeah.
Or this project. I met with this woman who was connected, to a professor, and I had the internship, and it was an internship, so it wasn't even a job, like a full-time job. It was an internship.
It's better than no job.
Right,
at all.
It's better than nothing. And then I also, at that time, I started investing in producing things. So like now we're jumping around a little bit
So you say investing in producing things?
Yes. Yeah,
so what does that mean?
In college, I started investing in Broadway shows. Like putting in money into Broadway shows, mostly so I could learn about the business and the back end of a show.
Okay.
There isn't really a course on how to produce. I have like meetings with people and like, oh, how do you produce? And I'm like, you just do it. Right. And it's sort of, you just make sure no one dies, right? Like that you stay on budget and you just like, no one dies.
Yeah.
That's sort of, obviously that's very like, I'm joking because of course there's much more to that, but it's a lot of it is just doing it. But part of the investing was so I could see the budgets and see all like the legal documents just to see sort of like where the money flowed and what happened and then start to make connections that way too. So I had been doing that. I had this internship and then I got another internship and then I got a full-time job and then I got another full-time job and I started.
What was that first full-time job?
It was operations associate at AWA Partners, which was a tour booking agency, which 4 months in closed its doors. Like, it had been running for a very long time, and it just...
And then as I was just
hitting my stride, they were like, and we have to let everyone go.
But you probably learned a lot there.
Oh, totally. And
made
like
some good connections.
Exactly. And the whole industry, particularly theater, it's all relationship-based. So a lot of those people I worked with then, I now work with at a different company, just in a different capacity. Like, we're on the opposite side of the table now from each other. But yeah, and I started producing stuff on the side and just meeting people and figuring it out. And
so where,
I don't know if that's a good answer.
So when you say, so we're jumping from the, so you had that first job,
mm-hmm.
you somehow convinced them to close and stop having their company. So you did they shut down after 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had another job.
I mean, they were running for like years, but I was only there for 4 months and then they
closed.
Yeah,
no, we're pretending that it's your fault.
Yes, it's exactly, it is my fault.
Right. And then, so what was the next company? So then you had another.
So then I went to work at a company, it's called IMG Artists, which mm-hmm. is it's like not affiliated anymore with the big IMG, but it was also a like booking and management company, but for dance and like jazz and orchestral things. So I worked at IMG Artists for 3 months, and it was just easier for me to have a job and find another job than wait around and try to find the perfect job. So I was there for 3 months, and I was basically looking for my next opportunity. And then I found a job at Broadway Across America, which is a producing and presenting theater company. So it's we produce shows on Broadway and then present them when they go on tour across the country. And that role was for the business intelligence coordinator.
Coordinator?
It's basically like covert theater ops. No, it's not. It's it was a lot of revenue management, inventory management. It was a lot of the data side of theater, right? So we have Broadway Across America has 44 markets across the country and Canada that we present touring Broadway shows in. And the revenue management department, of which were three people, we are just keeping track of all the data and making recommendations to make sure we make more money, right? Like
if Kansas City did really well when The Lion King or whatever went there, you would say, let's have an extra week, like that kind of thing?
Oh, no. So we would basically help plan ticket prices, right? So like based on demand. So we also, so it's a subscription-based model similar to sports where you have season ticket holders and that's sort of your guaranteed revenue. And then we also sell groups and single tickets. And so we would work sort of across everything, all the different verticals of how we could make money. And just see what was working and what wasn't working. And each year we would do a review with the team, the marketing, the ticketing team of each city, and just be like, this is how you did. This is what's upcoming. Here's what we recommend. You know, so sometimes a season wouldn't be as strong because of the programming. But it's basically, tracking return on ad spend, dynamically pricing tickets. Like, so, you know, like when you book a hotel or an airline or a flight, closer to the time you have to fly, it's more expensive,
right?
And it fluctuates. It's dynamic pricing of hotels and air, or like, you know, over Christmas, flights are more expensive than they are in the middle of August or whatever, right? So what we do, that's sort of what we do with tickets, right? If it's the end of the run and the show is really popular, you know, like you have one more chance to see the show, usually demand is higher.
Go up. Yeah.
And based on availability too. So if we're heavily subscribed, there's less single tickets available. We always try to have single tickets, have an entry price, right, that's not outrageous, but sometimes those sell out. So we would just track and analyze all that information so we could make the best informed decisions possible for our company. And then recently I was promoted to the social media strategist. So now I sort of still do the data, but on the marketing side now.
So what has been the most successful show that's gone around?
Have you heard of a show called Hamilton?
Never heard of it.
So Hamilton is changing the game. Specifically, subscription models were like sold out, right? Because sort of the only way You can't see. I'm making air quotes now, people listening to this podcast. Sort of the only way you can see Hamilton is if you buy a subscription, because there will be no, right? Because are you going to wait to buy single tickets if there might be some available, or you want to be sort of guaranteed to get your tickets? So for shows that aren't Hamilton, right? If a show on, you know, between five and if a city has between five and seven shows a season, and you have a Hamilton also on that season, you're pretty full. So touring Broadway is awesome right now because there's a lot of people interested in it. And what we're seeing is it's not just like people are, yes, coming for Hamilton, but they're staying also for the other shows as well.
So it's rising tide lifting all.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, usually on Broadway specifically, that doesn't necessarily happen. Like a rising tide lifts all boats. Because what we see on Broadway specifically is that, you know, ticket prices, single ticket prices go up on Broadway. So if a ticket used to cost, you know, $50 and you wanted to, you know, take a family four to see a show and you budget for that, that's great. That's what you have, right? But now tickets cost $200, right? So instead of that one bundle where you could go out, everyone, now your budget is changing. Yeah. And if you allocate $1,000 as your theater going budget, and that used to get you in to see four shows, now it might only get you in to see one or two. And usually the really popular shows are the ones that have the higher ticket prices. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? It's a commercial industry. It's just that other shows then can't necessarily keep up.
They've already spent their money on the expensive show.
Yeah, that's right. Or you're going to wait to see the other show as opposed to saying, well, I can't get a ticket to Hamilton next week. I'll go see something else. Or what is happening a lot of times is I can't get a ticket to Hamilton this week. I will buy it 9 months from now and go see it. But then you still spend the money, and it's just interesting to see sort of what's happening. So specifically on Broadway, I wouldn't say a rising tide lifts all boats. But Broadway is also doing really well because the content that we have on Broadway right now is really great.
What would be the second most show then, right behind Hamilton?
Well, Dear Evan Hansen won the Tony 2 years ago. So that one's really popular. Come From Away, also really popular. And of course, you have your long-running hits, like Phantom of the Opera has been on Broadway for 30 years. And so another thing that's interesting about, right, so touring Broadway, the shows come in for 1 or 2 weeks, sometimes 5 weeks, and then they leave and they go to another city. On Broadway, there's only 41 theaters. So what we're seeing now is sort of a traffic jam of new shows coming in to Broadway because we have longer running hits. So there are 41 theaters, but about half of them are taken up by hits, right? So Phantom's been running for 30 years. That theater is taken, right? Like, that's not going anywhere. Lion King, Aladdin, Hamilton, Dear Evan Hansen, Come From White, like these hits, right? Where usually a show would run and then it would close. But now it's sort of running and running and running and running.
Yeah.
Which is great, but then you don't get the turnover of the new content as frequently as you did.
Need more theaters.
I don't know if more theaters would fix the problem, though. It might just
create more longer running.
Yeah, I don't
shows.
Know.
Yeah. We need more of the off-Broadway. What makes something off-Broadway? What makes something off-off-Broadway?
Good question.
Is there an off-off-off-Broadway?
I mean, probably, yes. Like, physically written out on a piece of paper, there probably is. It's the size of the theater, like the physical amount of seats in the theater, and also the location. If you are interested to learn more, you can look up at like the official Tony Awards rules and the eligibility.
There's rules?
Well, so the Tony Awards are the Oscars, but for theater.
Right.
But only for Broadway. And so you have to be in a, I think it's in a 500 seat house or bigger within like the Midtown range known as Broadway and all of these different things. The reason is Broadway versus off-Broadway is the union rules and the fees. So usually Broadway is more expensive. Because it's bigger, for one, but it's also you have to pay more fees because it's a Broadway contract as opposed to an off-Broadway contract. And off-Broadway is, so I think it's like 499 seats and down, and off might be just like 99 seats.
What we're doing,
10 seats, whatever. But it's really, I think there's also a lot of really great off-Broadway stuff right now as well.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, so But you're not managing the actual Broadway stuff. You're managing, this is touring.
So in my day job, yes, it's the touring
right.
stuff. And then on the side, so one of the shows I produced on Broadway, it was on Broadway.
Okay.
And then another show I produced was off-Broadway.
So you kind of have two different lives going on right now.
Yes.
So you have this full-time job.
Yes.
You're dealing with the touring.
Mm-hmm.
You've recently moved to social media managing mm-hmm. at that
still
job.
With the touring.
It's still with the touring. So you say you have this other job.
Mm-hmm.
How did that start? Is this going back to being in college and doing some investing and getting involved in that? I guess explain to me, is this one day a week you do this other stuff? Is
it's
this
sort
whenever
of just
it comes up?
All the time. So I don't sleep a lot. You know, it's like I'll get up early and either go to the gym or I'll work. Then I'll go to work and then I'll either stay up late and do more work and sort of just start it all over again. So with producing, it's I think a lot of producing is just traditionally it's about raising money or finding capital.
Yes.
But a lot of it is also finding a project you really believe in. So I see a lot of theater. The shows that I have happened to invest in, I saw them when they were sort of already alive, and then I jumped on board. There are other producers who it's their idea and they spearhead it the whole way, and that's sort of a full-time job.
So you're jumping on board to keep it going or
yeah,
to bring it up a level?
Both.
Okay.
Right? So I really believe in the shows that I work on. So Indecent on Broadway was the show that was nominated for the Tony. And I saw it off Broadway when it had its smaller run mm-hmm. and I fell in love with it and I knew I had to be a part of it, and it was transferring to Broadway, and so that was the time that I could get involved.
So what would give me a breakdown of what that process was like, maybe start-ish to finish-ish
of raising money?
Well, just what you were involved in.
Sure. So I saw the show off Broadway, absolutely lost my mind, like fell head over heels for the show, and then I met with one of the lead producers who are sort of the people really spearheading the process of bringing it to Broadway. And I said, how much money do I need to bring in to get my name above the title? Of course, some of producing is a little bit of vanity, right? You mm-hmm. get your name, and if you get,
yeah.
and like you get all these things. And they told me X amount of dollars. And I said, okay, great. And I went out and raised the money.
Just like that?
I mean, and it sounds, I mean, what I tell people, when they are like, oh, how do you raise money? It's you just ask, right? It costs nothing to ask. And the worst they can say is no. I was very fortunate in that I did a good sales pitch and they said yes, or they believed in the project or they believed in me.
Is part of the pitch that people will get a return
yes.
on their investment?
So of course, right.
Okay.
So yeah. So part of the pitch is that if the show is a hit, they will get their money back.
As a continuing return or
mm-hmm.
just a certain percentage? But if the show runs for 10 years, you're getting something for those 10
like
years.
Pre-recruitment, it's a certain percent, and then post-recruitment, it's another percent, and then you can, right? So the original investors in Phantom of the Opera or Wicked or whatever, right? Doing great.
Right.
But it's risky. But
yeah.
It's also a love of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also did a lot of social media on the show as well. And so that is sort of what led me to start my own company called Red Pelican Creative, which is a social media consulting and management company. So I work with actors and some smaller shows and some companies even to just build their brands and help manage their social media and just sort of, you know, be the training wheels or the wheels for them.
And what was the inspiration for the name Red Pelican?
This goes to my dad, who apparently gets 10 cents every time I use the name. So Red is my college mascot, and Pelican was my high school mascot. So Red Pelican.
No middle school mascots in there?
No, the Panthers were the middle school.
Yeah, I guess a Pelican Panther would be
yeah.
some weird Greek
but,
mythological.
But no, Red Pelican Creative seemed to fit. So that was that. And yeah.
And does this have an online presence?
It does. There's
yeah.
a website. We
Great.
Have a website. But it's...
Give us some promo. Give us your best
right.
pitch for how we can find out more information about Red Pelican Creative
LLC. Oh, my
LLC.
Goodness. I mean, you could just Google my... So my...
you
can
just
Google it.
You could just Google it.
You could Google it. Or you can... so my social media handles are at officialdml. So my website is officialdml.com. And then you can play around and find the Red Pelican stuff on that website. It didn't make sense to create its own separate website because it's It doesn't, like, that sort of seemed
Your name
silly.
Is above the name.
Right. It's Red me. Pelican it's just me creative. Doing all of it. But it's, for tax reasons, it's easy to, it's better to have an LLC.
Yeah. So there's where you can check all that out. You can also check out the Young Alumni Programs website for upcoming events and find out how to stay involved. It's alumni.cornell.edu/young-alumni. Also, aren't you highly involved with alumni?
I am highly involved with Cornell alumni.
Do you need to push your year's info right here?
We can. So class of 2014, we have our five-year reunion coming up in June of 2019. And I believe there'll be information coming out. I'm one of the reunion co-chairs for raising money for getting gifts to the university. And I'm also, I do a lot. I'm involved with NYC Cornellians. I'm on the Cornell Alumni Advisory Board. I'm a admissions ambassador. You can find, I do a lot of Cornell stuff. So when I'm not sleeping and not doing my work, I'm doing Cornell stuff.
Thinking about Cornell, dreaming or daydreaming about Cornell.
Right.
And you can also stay connected by following the Cornell Young Alumni Program's Facebook page. You can also follow me online at funnyaaron.com. I'll tell you my website. I won't make you Google it because my name is too complicated to find on there. But funnyaaron.com. I also have a podcast called But I Also. It's a podcast exploring not only what you do for a living, but also what else you love to do. And I put on my radio voice whenever I say that. Dana, this has been fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming down. Go Big Red.
Woo!
Go Pelicans.
Go Pelicans.
Music for Fresh from the Hill was written, produced, and recorded by Kia Albertson Rogers, class of 2014. You can contact him at koa3@cornell.edu.